This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com with a new episode every week. This is episode 229, and this week we are discussing the From the Outside In topic, movie collectibles. Why do we collect them, and what are our personal favorites that are proudly displayed in our personal theaters or man caves? We've also got the latest in movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments, new releases, including Captain America Civil War, and be sure to get the hoe on the go with our Apple or Android apps. Just look for The Hollywood Outsider in your app store of choice, or find us on iTunes, where reviews are very much appreciated, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, or Stitcher, and please share the show with your friends. My name is Scott Clark, and joining me today are my fellow hoes. First off, a man who, despite factual evidence that bears do live in certain jungles, refuses to believe so, Justin McCumber.
I have yet to investigate this myself.
Photographic evidence isn't enough, huh?
No. It's doctored. It's all photoshopped.
Man, that's too much work, brother. That's too much work.
Also joining us, a guy torn between cheering for and crying over the fact that Ted Cruz dropped out of the Republican nomination, Brian Williams.
Wow, we're bringing politics into this. Why not?
If you guys haven't figured it out already, Aaron will not be joining us this week. Apparently, he's golfing out in Alabama somewhere. With that said, I'd like to take this opportunity to say Kurt Russell sucks, Alfred Hitchcock is overrated, and video games are way cooler than movies.
Wow.
I think yeah. Aaron somewhere just kind of doubled over from that kick to the nuts.
Somebody's house is getting bombed.
Probably. Well, speaking of the election and politics and all that, did you guys see that Ted Cruz's comment about Donald Trump, comparing him to Biff Tannen from Back to the Future?
Mm-mm, I didn't.
I just got basically all I had time today was read a couple of the little headlines basically pop up on the phone type of stuff.
But. Well, this was actually yesterday, I believe, which is kind of funny because I heard that news roughly a couple hours before he actually made the announcement that he was dropping out. I just thought it was kind of funny. Biff Tannen, apparently he claimed that there's some story that the character Biff Tannen was based on Donald Trump. Like he said that was supposed to be Donald
that.
Trump.
I could see that.
I don't know the validity of that. I think the actor who played Biff Tannen, remind me his name, something.
Oh, it's God, if you hadn't asked, I could have told you.
Yeah.
Tom
Wilkinson.
Tom Wilson.
Yeah. He basically said no, there was nothing to do with that, and who knows? We'd have to talk to the writer, I guess. But you could kind of see it. He kind of looks like him a little bit. Kind of acts like him a little bit, but I just thought it was kind of funny. So since we had the movie time, I thought I'd do it. As of this recording today, the day that we're recording this, it is May the 4th, which is officially Star Wars Day. So May the 4th be with you guys,
and with you,
and with you. And I'm sure this is probably about the 4,000th time we've heard that.
Yeah, everybody changes their Facebook status or their Facebook profile picture to something Star Wars related today. I didn't have time. I don't know. You guys doing anything fun? Rewatching any of the movies or going back and like watching in reverse order or something?
I'll probably rewatch The Force Awakens after we're done recording.
Nice. I've watched it probably 3 or 4 times since I got it on iTunes. It just is so freaking good to watch. So, all right, well, let's go ahead and talk about some movie and TV news. Well, first off, like it or not, we're getting a sequel to the 1996 film Space Jam. But this one is going to be helmed by Fast and Furious director Justin Lin and replacing Michael Jordan with LeBron James. Now, we've been criticized in the past for not being too kind on movies geared towards kids. Do you guys think this will fall into the same category of disinterest, or is there enough nostalgia surrounding this one to give it a chance?
I didn't really care too much for it when I saw it, but I do realize that there is it's one of those movies that's loved by a lot of people who I think were probably kids at the time. When it debuted, and so it appealed, yeah. So it appealed to them more. Where I had different tastes by that stage in my life, I guess. But
I was 24.
But I think we're kind of getting into where that age, where you know those people that bracket, where it's kind of retro to them. So now we're starting to get into things that we're past. I think we're just about remade, or at least. It's everything is scheduled to be remade from the 80s. So now I guess we're kind of moving into the 90s, and this just could be the jumping point.
So the 90s and the new 80s, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, we've kind of seen this pattern for a while. And so now it's everything's, you know, we've talked about this for years where it's almost the remakes. They plan all this stuff from every decade and we're almost passing up our current time. Or we're how many times have we remade Spider-Man?
I know, we're on our third.
Exactly. And so now they're running out of stuff to remake, and it's just kind of it's almost like Jar Jar Martin and his Game of Thrones show is moving past his books that he's so slow to write.
Did you say Jar Jar Martin?
That's what I thought he said.
It's easier to say than George R. R. Martin. So
you used to like up my books. What about you, Justin? Is this any interest to you at all? I know you're kind of a kid movie hater.
No, I hate that because I'm not a hater. I'm just I'm really skeptical that Hollywood can successfully make movies that are good, you know, that appeal to children, but that don't talk down to them or don't, you know, that they actually work for the laughs and they, and that it's something that adults can really enjoy as well, which, you know, I think Pixar kind of cornered that market. Mm-hmm. I don't hate kids' movies. I just think most of them are lazy and really should have worked harder. But for this one, I never saw the original Space Jam. I have never been a basketball aficionado. It's never been a sport that really appealed to me. So a movie about basketball, kind of like I am with baseball, I don't watch them. Even though, you know, it did have Michael Jordan, it still wasn't enough to entice me. And like I said, at the time, I was like 24 years old when it came out. So I'm sure I was, I don't know, busy doing something else rather than seeing a Looney Tunes movie.
See, I was 16 when it came out. It was just the perfect age for me to love this movie. And I'm an unashamed fan of it. I understand that it's not a great movie. It's very silly. Even the animation looks pretty dated by now. And Michael Jordan is not an A-list actor by any means. But I'm still kind of excited for it. And
Well, LeBron James isn't an A-list actor either, but I mean, anybody who watched Trainwreck that he's actually a charming actor. And I think that casting him in the Michael Jordan role is a stroke of genius.
Mm-hmm. It makes
sense. The animation technology we've got today, this is sure to be a visual feast, especially with Justin Lin directing it.
Well, that's kind of where I was going to go with this was as far as the technology part of it, because the first one had the traditional cartoons in there. Those types of characters are where we've kind of evolved and gone past those now. So now it's all these Pixar-ish type animation stuff where it's a little bit different thing. Do you think that would work well, or do you think it'd be maybe done in a different fashion?
I think if they don't try to make Bugs Bunny look like a real bunny, you know, if they don't try and take it too far, the realism, if they keep that cartoon factor, I think it'll work just fine.
Yeah, I kind of hope they stick with the hand-drawn stuff a little bit, or at least to make it look hand-drawn. I don't want Looney Tunes to be Pixar quality. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I
like that classic feel of it. We don't get a whole lot of hand-drawn animation.
I mean, there is something that's appealing about real life people appearing to interact with these hand-drawn colored and, you know, animation characters, you know, mm-hmm. the Tweety Birds, the Sylvester, the cat and stuff like that, whoever. But
I think the big thing with LeBron, or the choice to have him as the actor, is there's a lot of differing opinions on him as a person. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the politics at all, what would happen, but he was in Cleveland and left there to go to went to Miami,
right.
and then came back to Cleveland. And there's a lot of people that just were like burning jerseys and all this kind of thing. And
yeah, but they're over. I mean, they're, you know, now that he's been there for a little bit, for the most part, from what I understand, they're pretty much over it at this point. And Miami welcomed him back fairly well when he went there earlier this season. So
mm-hmm.
I think for the most part, he's, you know, he's still one of the most likable stars the NBA has.
Yeah. Who? What other options are there at this point?
Well, there's a handful of them, but you're right. He's the main guy.
Rodman didn't pick up the phone.
Him and his multicolored hair. All right, well, let's move on to TV news. Now, we did already know that Jack Ryan TV show was in the works, but this week we learned that who will be playing the iconic role, and it's John Krasinski of The Office fame. On top of that, Netflix is getting a standalone Punisher show coming off of the success of the character on Daredevil. I'd say that only one of these was a real surprise, but are they both good surprises?
I'm really excited for both, actually. I mean, the mm-hmm. Punisher may have been the best part of the season two of Daredevil, which, not to diminish the Daredevil character and actor, Charlie Cox, they were great too, but the Punisher was just this force of nature on that show. And now that he's going to be getting his own series, I think it's perfect and almost a no brainer. Everybody right. has fallen in love with this Punisher. But the real interesting thing to me is this Jack Ryan show with John Krasinski, because, you know, Krasinski's not the kind of actor that I instantly think of
yeah.
when it comes to action roles. But everybody who saw 13 Hours, which he did with Michael Bay, where he played a Navy SEAL, had nothing but, you know, really nice things to say about Krasinski's performance. So he's going to be playing Jack Ryan in during his years as a CIA analyst. I think he's got the perfect look for that, but I think he also could pull off a tough enough look to look believable when he inevitably has to get out in the field and dodge bullets. But this is being put together with Carlton Cuse, who people probably remember most from Lost. He was one of the showrunners on there, mm-hmm. as well as Graham Rowland, who's writing it with Michael Bay's Platinum Dunes and Skydance Media companies. And it's landed Amazon with a series commitment and the intention to go straight to series. I don't know what that means. It's got a series commitment with the intention to go straight to series. I guess I don't know enough Hollywood speak to know exactly what that means. But the casting of Krasinski is likely going to really help push this forward. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to see it. Jack Ryan is a character that I read so many of those Clancy books in a row that I burned myself out on reading them, but they were just so compelling. Theatrically, I've enjoyed most of the Jack Ryan movies, especially with Alec Baldwin's run at it, the first movie, Hunt for Red October. Mm-hmm. But this is actually, and aside from that, this is actually going to be Carlton Cuse's fourth show that he's produced and that's on the air, because he was already doing Bates Motel, and was doing what was that show? The Colony over on Sci-Fi. And I know he's got another show. I don't remember the name of it, but man, that guy's getting some work too. But anyway, I think it's an interesting idea. What do you guys think? Are you at all interested in seeing Jack Ryan in a series as opposed to, you know, your usual two-hour movie?
I am, but I also wonder how exciting it's going to be to see him as an analyst. You know, I mean, how exciting is that? Yeah. The cool part about the Jack Ryan books in the movies were that he was an analyst thrust into an action movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm sure this is going to be equal parts, you know, Homeland and one of those military shows. Just because he's an analyst doesn't mean he's not going to have to go out into the field. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure with the talent they're putting into this show that this character is going to be out and about dodging a lot of bullets.
Hmm. What about you, Brian?
I like the Jack Ryan stories. Again, I'm kind of with you. The whole idea with Jack Ryan was he was this office worker who analyzes stuff, and he's, like you say, he's thrown into an action sequence. But it was a fish out of water type experience. It wasn't somebody who was bred for that type of adventure, you know.
And that's what the Chris Pine movies kind of felt like.
Right. If it is that, and he's, like you say, it's more of a Homeland type of thing, I'm sure they've got their ways of building up the drama. I'll give it a shot. I'm a Prime Amazon Prime member, so I'll watch a couple of episodes. But generally speaking, as a whole, I've not been very impressed with Amazon's material. So I'm a little bit leery, but definitely I'm more excited about The Punisher than I am Jack Ryan.
Man, everybody was talking about Punisher on Twitter when that first episode or when those episodes dropped. Everybody was just saying how awesome that was. So I'm not surprised at all that they're getting a full series on that.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Well, let's move on. Since I am hosting this week, we get to talk about some video game movie news that dropped this week. Not only did we learn that we're getting a movie based on Sega's Shinobi, which is basically a ninja video game, but we also have an official casting for Lara Croft in Academy Award winner Alicia Vikander of the Danish Girl fame, which she won the Academy Award, as well as Ex Machina. Now, I know we were all kind of had our hopes on Daisy Ridley, but how are we feeling about this choice?
Well, I don't know about her action chops, but from what I've seen her in, she's a fantastic actress. It's as good as any other, actress they could put in a role. So, I'm fine with this. Angelina Jolie is pretty much the stereotype at this point. I don't know, or maybe the benchmark, so to speak. So
she made sense for that version of Lara Croft, the new younger updated version. I think this actress is more to, you know, more set for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from what I understand, you know, there's been many variations of her, or her appearance has changed over the video game lifespan.
Totally. She was totally a sex appeal symbol in the original video games. And even in the Angelina Jolie movies, they've moved quite a bit away from that with the recent incarnations and the video games and the upcoming movie, hopefully. So I like this choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, Daisy Ridley, I'm sure she would have done a fine job with it. But, you know, Daisy, you've got Star Wars.
Yeah.
Why don't you go ahead and leave a franchise for some other woman out there? Thank you very much. And I think Alicia Vikander is a great choice for it. She's got the look, and I'm sure, it's pretty nice having an Academy Award winner playing the lead in a video game adaptation.
Totally. Yep. Really looking forward to seeing that. I cannot wait to see some screenshots of how she looks in the costume or whatnot. They can train her to be action, I assume. So really looking forward to that. Video game movies are becoming a thing, guys. They're popping them out like a lot more per year than they were in the past. So hopefully that someday I'll get my moment where we've got as many video game movies as we do Marvel and DC movies, but fingers crossed.
Oh, please. Someday can I get Mass Effect?
And BioShock?
Yep.
So many properties that make great movies.
Better than Shinobi.
That's such a weird choice, especially with how...
Very weird.
With how tight-lipped Sega is with all of their properties. For those not familiar, Sega hasn't done anything with a lot of their characters and video games with anything, even in the video game realm. They're not doing anything. And then just to like say, here you go, have Shinobi.
Let me ask you guys this. You guys have both mentioned how much you're pining for these video game movies, which is fine. But would a format, something like maybe on Netflix where it's more of a series? I mean, because you're talking.
I'd love games, that too.
But I mean, because all these ones that you're mentioning are all these games that takes like 400 hours to finish.
Yeah, it's true.
And to get a 2-hour movie, probably at best, all I hear is fanboys, you know, bitching and moaning and crying because they left this out and this character wasn't in it and he was, you know, in this game and blah, blah, blah. You know, and you've got all these games, like Mass Effect, there's what, four of those games? Five?
A fourth one's coming out soon.
Fourth one's coming, okay. And again, they're all 100-plus hour games.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so,
yeah.
Easily. So, again, I mean, there's I guess there's so much material there, and I'm sure they wouldn't make it from the movies from the game. It would be some sort of continuation, prequel, mid-sequel thing, something, spinoff. But again, there's so much information and so much stuff there, you would almost be doing it a disservice by just putting it in a 2-hour movie.
Yeah, that's fair. There's also some games, though, that are much shorter experiences that I think could be told in a 2-hour movie. Sure. Something like a BioShock or
Portal.
Uncharted. Portal would be interesting. Yeah. So many ideas, but
2 hours of someone jumping through a colored hole.
No, you can make a story. The characterization between those two characters was actually pretty clever. I could see that being made into a movie. But
well, Brian, is there a video game you wouldn't mind seeing adapted?
The first one for me is Gears of War. Mm-hmm. To me, that's just ripe for the pickings for a really strong cinematic.
Well, the story can't get any worse.
Get The Rock to play Dom or something.
Yeah.
But these guys are all freaks. Maybe the guy that plays the mountain in Game of Thrones. You know, you need about 10 more of those guys, and you'd have something there. But yeah, but I think that is a material that would be, I mean, it's pretty much perfect for a cinematic experience.
I agree. I could see like a Zack Snyder look for that totally. Well, we don't have any trailers for anything video game related right now, but Brian does have a new trailer for us. What do you got, man?
Yeah, this one is Bad Moms. Now, the only one that I watched is the Red Band trailer, but it's about this this comedy. It's a comedy from the writers of The Hangover. It's about a girl named Amy who's got a seemingly perfect life, a great marriage, overachieving kids, beautiful home, career. However, she's overworked, overcommitted. She's exhausted to the point that she's about to snap. So fed up, she joins forces with two other overstressed moms on a quest to liberate themselves from conventional responsibilities by going on a wild, unmom-like binge of overdue freedom, fun, and self-indulgence, which puts them on a collision course with the PTA queen, Gwendolyn, and her clique of devoted perfect moms. Now, Mila Kunis leads this bunch with Kristen Bell, Katherine Hahn, who to me is hilarious, and Christina Applegate. So pretty much with the only hoe that has any experience with parental pressures gone, what do you guys think about this trailer? Justin?
It looks fine. I mean, it looks funny. I adore Mila Kunis and Kristen Bell. Katherine Hahn, like you said, she's hysterical. It's got a great cast. I'm sure it'll be funny. Is it one that, you know, I want to run out to a theater and check out? Probably not. I mean, this is a film that I think I'd enjoy much more, you know, in my home theater with a drink and could just kick back and watch it. But sure, I like that. What I do like is that this is yet another film and what seems to be hopefully a developing trend of movies about women, starring women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had some decades of a lot of guy movies, and I love that women are getting movies made for them, made about, you know, their lives and the things they go through. So I think it's a great trend, and I hope it continues.
I laughed a lot in this trailer, and I will be seeing this in the theater because I watched this trailer with my wife sitting next to me for the first, she didn't even know what I was watching. I just pulled it up while I was prepping for the show. And I have not seen her laugh that hard at a trailer in a long time. You guys mentioned it's written by the guy from The Hangover. I got a little bit of comedy from something like Bridesmaids, which my wife adored that movie. Oh, this trailer was hysterically funny to me. Just the comment about the balloon animals, which I'll let you watch the trailer for that.
Right.
Oh my gosh, that was so funny. I laughed so hard. I will be definitely checking this one out. This is the Mother's Day movie that I want to see. Not that the movie called Mother's Day, that's more or less drama with a little bit of comedy mixed into it. This is the one that should be released this weekend, I think. But unfortunately, we're not going to get it for quite a while. When is that one coming out, Brian?
Bad Moms opens up on June 25th. Yeah, I'm kind of in the boat with Justin on this one, just so you know. I laughed. I watched the Red Band trailer, and you could have probably taken out two jokes out of that trailer, and it would have been fine.
Yeah.
I don't know what was so – I mean, there was a couple of things, the balloon animal joke probably. You might have even been able to leave that one in. I don't know. I don't know what the rules are with trailers, but I didn't feel like I was seeing much that was new with that. I wasn't – other than – hey, some moms go out binge drinking and partying and stuff. And all right. I don't know if I haven't seen much yet that really grabs me about that. But
I'm surprised. I really thought you guys would think that was funny.
It is funny. I don't really get excited about comedies. I love watching them, but they don't draw emotion from me at the idea of watching a comedy. It's nothing bad. Just it's not my passion.
All right. You can check out this trailer and more at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can reach out to us on Twitter at @H_outsider. Go on to facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Join the group, join the page. Lots of fun and stuff going on there. And if you've got a lot more to say than what'll fit in 140 characters, then you can always email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com.
Let's go on to it from the outside in. Our topic this week is movie collectibles. We're all grown adults, right? But I think it's fair to say that as fans of film, we all have prized possessions in our homes that showcase our love for one of our favorite pastimes. Now, Justin, you probably have the biggest collection of everything, especially Star Wars. But what is it about movies that make us okay with owning, let's be honest, toys and decorations depicting our favorite characters from our favorite movies?
Well, I know for me, especially with Star Wars, it goes, you know, straight back to the childhood and all those Christmases where I would get Star Wars toy after Star Wars toy and get to play with them. That I think one of the really fortunate things about our generation is that, you know, we've kind of all decided as a group that we're not going to just let our adulthood get rid of our childhood. And so we're much more comfortable with going into a store and buying a figure or, you know, some what would have been childish 10 years ago. People are more than happy to go into a store and buy and then openly display at work, in their home, wherever. And so I played with these toys as a child, and I thought, you know, there is no reason why I can't continue to collect them in the present day. Just, you know, I don't sit there and voice them as I move them around and put
them
in
positions. Action figures, Mom. They're action figures.
I mean, I put them on a shelf, but I still, it's an appeal to my childhood for a lot of it. And so, the other aspect of it is I love these films, but I can't watch them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Having these pieces of memorabilia around, it kind of fills in those moments when you wish you could watch a movie or a scene, but you can't. But maybe you've got a character figurine or a poster that depicts that moment. It keeps that film that means so much to you always present in your life. And I find that to be just a really nice thing to be able to do.
I agree totally. For me, it's about the nostalgia too, but for me, it's more of an expression of my interests. I love having people over and seeing my collections in my man cave and just be able to be like, yep, guys, this is what I'm into, and be proud of it. Whereas, like you mentioned, 10 years ago, you'd probably be kind of ridiculed. And to be honest, I do get ridiculed sometimes, but I take it to excess sometimes as well. Justin, before I go to Brian real quick, I want to ask you, with all of your collectibles, do you ever keep any like in the original packaging, or
I don't.
You just take them out and display them?
No. I mean, people, it almost physically bothers me that people will buy a toy and then just leave it in the box. Why? I mean, I could have understood if it was a rare mix-up print on a figure that your mother bought in, you know, 1977. That I can kind of understand. One, it was back in the day before people really collected these kinds of things. It's they need to be out of the box. And so I don't keep any of them in their original packaging. If it's something that's important, if it has like multiple parts and I'm not using them all, and I'll explain some of that later, then I'll keep the box in a closet. But no, my toys are out. They're on the shelf and they're able to play around when I'm not here.
All right, Brian, what about you? Why do you collect stuff, or do you even?
Well, you know, I have collecting tendencies. I've always, like, I've grown up collecting baseball cards, comic books, and even movies. Still, for the most part, collect movies. However, I honestly don't have a lot of memorabilia. The toys, a whole lot of posters and that kind of stuff. I've got some, but I don't really have. I just never really got into that because, you know, I would see some of the toys in the aisle, let's say at Target or Toys R Us or something, whatever, and go, all right, hey, that's cool. I wouldn't mind having that, but you know, and then it's, well, whatever.
I've never had the impulse to buy.
No, never did, because then I go, okay, what am I going to do with it? Okay, my option A, I can leave it in the box and have it as a investment, hope that it's worth, you know, something down the road. But then I go, my practical side kicks in and says, now I've got to, this stuff starts piling up after a while. Now I've got to find storage for it. And then I go, well, if I open it, what am I really going to do with it? And just let it sit there? Am I going to play with it? Then it just gets knocked around or moved. And so, I mean, I've got, you know, some bobbleheads, stuff like that. But for the most part, I really don't collect a lot of stuff. But I do get that feeling, because that was really one of the things that I had kind of noted down, was the same thing that Justin had mentioned about it. It's kind of like you have that constant reminder of maybe a certain feeling that you get from a scene from a movie, maybe a certain character that sticks with you that you somehow associate with, you know, or maybe it's just something that, I don't know, just to have something that somebody else doesn't. I think we all like to be flattered, and that's pretty much everybody. You know, we collect things, I think partly to show off. I mean, to get recognition from similar, you know, people that are similarly minded. So you've got this wall of Alfred Hitchcock memorabilia, and you got 20 people over at the house. Two people go, holy crap, this stuff's awesome. Where did you find this? And where did you find that? And then, you know, you kind of find those couple of people that think like you and have similar interests. So, you know, we just also kind of like to say, you know, I'm a fan, like I say, to your point of, this is who I am. This is what I'm a fan of, you know, and this is kind of how I express that. So,
and those moments are totally cool when you actually get to have a visitor over at your house and have them actually appreciate the collection that you've got. Cause I've had people over and they say, really, man, you collect that and you got all this in your basement. But then every once in a while I get someone over that just is wowed by what I've got and just totally appreciates it. And that's a cool feeling. So I totally.
Yeah. It's one of those things to where that conversation and then they throw out something that you, it just lets you know that they get it.
Yep.
And totally get it. Maybe it's, hey, if you like this stuff, check out this website. I'm not into it as much, but my brother, who's a freak about this movie or this cartoon or whatever the case is, but he found a lot of cool stuff here. Check that out. You know, I mean, it could be even as something as simple as that.
Sure.
But yet, you know, even though that person may not be into it, they get it, and therefore they get you.
And so, totally. Well, that brings me to my next question. I know, Brian, you said you don't collect a whole lot, but Justin does for sure. What are your plans for your collectibles? I mean, none of us have kids to pass them on to, so are they going to forever collect dust or eventually wind up in a garage sale someday? What are we going to do with this stuff? I mean,
for me, I think I've got a couple of maybe some nephews or some younger cousins that have some geeky tendencies, so I'm hoping I could probably pawn it off on them. That's about my best hope. Other than that, they end up in a yard sale or the trash.
Justin, what about you?
I'll probably auction them off. No. I know my brother would like some of the things that I've got, but he's not that much of a collector. He likes to collect, but then he goes through phases. Let me just put it that way. So I don't know how much interest he would really have in taking my shit home. Mm-hmm. But I've got a lot of friends that I know they like some of the stuff that I've got. So I'm sure that, you know, if I die, hopefully Krista would go to, you know, Facebook or something and just say, hey, here's his stuff. Who wants it? And I want someone to have it that appreciates it. And if that's my niece or nephew, great. If it's my wife keeps it, great. If someone else gets it. That's great too. I just don't want some of them anyway to not, you know, to end up in a landfill.
Well, yeah, I don't think any of us would want that, but yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't have any nieces or nephews. I think I have a lot of friends that would probably dig it. So like you, maybe my wife, if something happened to me, would find a cool home for it. I know a lot of people that would love to take my collection home. but I don't know. I've never really thought about it. It's just been such a fun hobby to collect stuff and display it and start conversations with the people that come visit. I never really thought about that until a buddy pointed it out to me a couple weeks ago and said, what are you going to do with all this stuff? And to be honest, I never really thought of it. I always kind of looked at it as, like Brian said, an investment, something that I could sell once I'm old and it doesn't matter anymore. Or hopefully it does matter, but I kind of expect when I get to be 60, 70 years old, I'm not going to care as much. Maybe I could turn it around and take a vacation or something like that. We'll see what happens. Well, now it's time to brag. What items in your collection are you most proud to own? Maybe it's something that you have that's signed by somebody famous, or maybe it's something of high value. I just want to know what you have that might make our listeners jealous.
I'm not a big collector of posters because I don't have that much wall space. Mm-hmm. Certainly not enough to put up a whole bunch of movie posters. But I do like art created by others, kind of that's based on the things I like. So if someone does like a Star Wars image that I find especially appealing, then I'll buy something like that as opposed to just a movie poster. But I've got I do like autographed DVD cases. Mm-hmm. Because it's easy to put in a cabinet, doesn't take up a lot of space, and it's the autograph right there on the item, the work of art that they helped create. And I've got a lot of autographed stuff, but I kind of considered it a personal quest to get Linda Blair's autograph, because for me, The Exorcist is the scariest movie ever made. And even though I'm not as scared of it now as I used to be, I love the film and what she did in it. And when I heard a couple of years ago that she was coming to the local horror convention that they have in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I made sure to get my copy of The Exorcist and have her sign it. And fortunately, I was able to last through the line and get it. And, you know, she writes on the front of it, you know, Sweet Dreams, and then her name. And so that's one that if I had to be asked to keep one thing and everything else had to go, as far as non-Star Wars stuff, that would probably be one of the things that I kept. But, you know, as far as Star Wars goes, I've got, Jesus, I mean, figures and glasses and mugs. And with those Funko Pop figures that have become so popular, my house is overflowing with those things. And my desk at work has got a whole corner devoted to Sith and Empire Funko Pops. Almost like I'm amassing my own army. But I've that fever that I had for a little while for the Funko Pops is broken. And I'm kind of glad, because as cute as they are and as fun as they are, there's only so much room I've got. And they're starting to take up space that I would like for other things. And so what I've decided to do is to take a lot of stuff from my Star Wars collection and try to find a home for it with someone else, or if it's not that expensive or cool, just throw it away, because I want to start focusing on memorabilia that is quality and not just about quantity. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of really cool Star Wars figures and statuettes that you can buy out there from companies like Sideshow Collectibles and whatnot. The downside is those things are not cheap. You're talking couple hundred up to 1,000, depending on what you're looking at. So those I'll be getting a little more slowly than I would like. But I've found I love these things. A company in Japan, I think it was Bandai, made samurai armored versions Darth Vader, Boba Fett, and, you know, Darth Vader, his armor was inspired by the samurai look, especially mm-hmm. the helmet. So it's only kind of appropriate that somebody take that basic idea and then fully do a samurai armor version of all these characters. And I've had to spend a little bit of money to get them because they are not cheap. They're about $100 per figure, but I love them. They're just these such interesting looking figures. They're about 7 inches, 8 inches tall. The detail work is extraordinary. And it's something that if I didn't own and I met someone and they had it in their house and I would happen to be there, I would just stand there staring at them for a while. So those are currently my favorite pieces of Star Wars kind of memorabilia.
Cool. Brian, is there anything? I know you said you don't have much, but do you have any like one piece that you're proud of?
Well, I've got a collector's edition Usual Suspects little box set that I stumbled across years ago that had a lighter in it. So that was pretty cool. For a few years there, a lot of these movies might have some gimmicky thing with it and whatever, but to have the lighter with the Usual Suspects was pretty neat.
That's pretty cool.
I've got a autographed photo from John Wayne.
Oh, wow.
That was something that my mom scored, and so she passed it on to me. But really, again, that's really probably about it. I've got a few movie posters and stuff like that I've just purchased. You know, some special edition type stuff, some pictures with, you know, some celebrities. But, you know, maybe my movie collection in general. It's just, I mean, it's no Steve Peterson deal, but it'll, you know, it'll do. I really just don't have a whole lot of movie swag.
I'm actually with you in the movie department because, as you guys know, I'm more of a video game nerd than I am a movie geek. And my biggest part of my collections are like my Nintendo cartridge collection mm-hmm. and my Zelda collection. But I do have mm-hmm. a couple movie pieces that have become special to me more because of who gave them to me. And, you know, they were gifts that someone thought of me. The first one is I have a poster from the actual movie poster, like the, you know how the movie ones at the theater are like really a lot bigger
right.
than the regular ones. Mm-hmm. I have a full size one for Scott Pilgrim versus the World that Aaron's daughter actually scored for me when she worked at the theater back in the day.
Cool.
It's actually hanging up on my wall right now. And the other one is when Aaron went to one of the Comic Cons, he knows that my favorite movie of all time is Fight Club. And they had those special packaging of movies that they had that were released only at Comic Con. There's only like 500 of them. It had like this really cool art on the front of it, and it came with a poster that was signed by how do you pronounce his name? Chuck Palahniuk? Is that right?
It sounds right.
The close author. Enough. And you know, it's got the little number on it that shows that it's like number 300 and something of 500. So I've got something that's really rare. I've actually never even opened the DVD because I own, or the Blu-ray, excuse me. I've owned the DVD for years and Blu-ray for years, so I didn't really feel a need to open it. I just got that kind of proudly displayed in my basement. So those two pieces are my most treasured movie collectible kind of stuff. So more on the video game side, but those two pieces are definitely special to me. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Speaking of which, you actually got me one of my other favorite pieces.
Mm-hmm.
When Todd McFarlane started doing figurines for different movies and comic books, he created a lot of really special, or not he, his company went on to create some really special figurines. And one of them you sent me for Christmas, I think it was last year,
mm-hmm.
of the demon Prince of Darkness character from Legend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tim Curry with the red body and the hooves and the big black horns. And the figure is standing like against the with this backdrop of stone walls and swords and chains, and it looks so beautiful. And Legend is one of those movies that when I first saw it long time ago, I felt like I discovered this undiscovered treasure that nobody had ever seen it before. And I was able to introduce a lot of people to it. And it's a special movie to me. I think it's fantastic. And that figurine sits on top of one of my bookshelves, along with a couple of others of a similar vein. And I always look at that and am thankful that you got it.
Awesome. Glad you enjoyed it, man.
Very cool. I love it.
Well, those were our thoughts on our topic, but we also got lots of listener responses, including some weirdo named Aaron Peterson had a comment here. Brian, you want to read that one for us?
He says, I love film, always have. Certain films are closer to my heart, and when I find something special akin to that film, I love having it to share with anyone I come across. I don't treasure items it seems everyone has, Funko, for example. I collect things that just come across as special or unique to my respective passion. My most treasured collectibles are my Alfred Hitchcock clock, an official script of Rear Window that Scott got me, my autographed Bruce Campbell book, an autographed Kurt Russell as Snake pick from a Ho, no less, a leather-bound Firefly book with every script from the series, a detailed Hitchcock book on all his films from my mom, and a framed Ho work of art my daughter made for me.
Aww.
Very cool.
Corey Noah says, I mainly collect Deadpool Funko Pop figures and other exclusive pop figures. I do remember when I was a kid, I insisted on getting the Free Willy Collector's VHS that had the cool whale necklace that Jesse wore in the movie. My parents finally caved in and I wore it all the time. I think it's still rolling around somewhere in a box.
That's awesome.
But that's kind of the problem with these Funko, and I just use that term because there's a lot of different types of similar toy, you know, or, you know, figures, is that there's so many. And then there's 300 Funko ones, and there's another 150 of some other brand. And you go into, let's say, a place like Books A Million or just some other store that sells these types of things, and there's just walls or aisles of this stuff, and you're going, God, they're $15 a piece. You know, okay, if I just want the one, that's not too bad. But if I'm a collector, I mean, you would have to have 2-3 jobs just to pay for them all.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it got expensive, and that was one of the reasons I broke my fever on it. Just it's when I looked at my Amazon list of how many more of them I wanted, there was like 100. Yeah. I'm like, what am I doing? And so, I put a stop to that.
Our next one comes from Steve Peterson. He says, probably my current favorite collectible or collection is a complete set of limited edition Marvel Cinematic Universe steel books. Next month, I will have some of these signed by Chris Evans, Chris Hemsworth, and Tom Hiddleston. Still not sure which I will have them sign. Had a fun time hunting all these down, but my wallet hated me for it. Totally worth it, though. And just as a heads up, Steve had a lot more that he talked about on the Facebook group.
Steve always does.
And so, Steve, I kind of stuck with your current favorite one instead of reading all of your lists. So hope you understand, man. But go check out the Facebook group if you want to see the rest of his collection. It's pretty impressive.
He types like I talk.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Mac Herring says, I would have to say the best I can do is a movie poster I got my hands on when I used to work at the movies at the mall. It's a one sheet of a lightning bolt going through a halo for the movie The Saint. It may not be rare now, but it was rare then because movie theaters across the country were told to take it down and destroy it for some reason. I never got an official reason from a manager at the time, but it had something to do with the provocativeness of the poster. Now, sadly, you can probably just order it from Amazon.
What's provocative about a lightning bolt going through a halo?
I mean, what is it, falling through some cleavage or something?
probably it's probably got more to do with the anti-religion type sentiment or something, maybe.
Philip Thompson says, the reason why I like collecting stuff is because it's like you have a constant reminder of that first time you saw the movie. It brings back all the feelings of that time where you were blown away by that scene or cried at that death. My most prized is a Batman collection. I have a room in my house just dedicated to Batman. I have a whole bookshelf full of just the Batman Funko Pop. Boy, those keep coming up. I have an autographed Batman picture from The Dark Knight signed by Christian Bale. And Aaron Eckhart.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, the Funko Pop thing. Just crazy how much those are popping up.
I would be curious how many people have actually gone so far as to actually tattoo something, you know, movie related onto them. Because, I mean, I know I've got two Dark Tower tattoos. That's how much the books mean to me. So I'd be curious to hear people's if they actually get tattoos.
I know Steve Peterson does. He's got all kinds of Lost and other shows.
Yes, he does. I've seen him. Yep. Next one comes from Reese Bennett. He says, I too am a fan of Steelbook editions, but I absolutely had to have the Marvel Phase 1 collector set and the collector versions of Nolan's Dark Knight films. Good call.
Yeah, I've got that Marvel collector's set, the Phase 1 set. Love it. And I picked up one for season for Phase 2.
Mm-hmm.
So they're side by side on my shelf with the Thanos Funko Pop figure standing between them.
I've got the Phase 1, and I've looked at Phase 2, and part of me is going, well, you've got Phase 1. You're almost obligated to get Phase 2 at this point. But I wasn't as impressed with it as I was the briefcase thing.
It doesn't have that visual pop because it's it looks like that ball from the opening of Guardians of the Galaxy on a stand. So it doesn't have that cool attaché steel look that the Phase 1 has. But I'm so anal that if I get this collector's set for one season or one phase, I've got to keep doing it.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Totally.
All right. Amy Hutchison says, I took a shadow box and cut a slot in the top of the frame, just big enough to fit movie and concert tickets. I have like a decade where I didn't have to have a ticket to see a movie, or I would have probably be on a second box by now.
Really cool idea.
Yeah, because I save all of my movie stubs, my ticket stubs, and I've been looking for an idea of something to do with them. I've seen where you can maybe like make a take a tabletop, some sort of coffee table or even a larger table, whatever. And then you put that.
And lacquer them on.
Lacquer it on. Yeah. What is some sort of modge podge, something another they call it, or I don't know. But anyway, yeah, some sort of clear sealant to where it seals them in there and everything. So, but that's cool. I may end up, that sounds a lot easier.
Yeah.
a lot less messy.
Then you just drop it in there. You just never worry about it. And it kind of makes its own art right on the wall. It was really, really cool.
Yeah,
I used to keep a Pearl Jam concert ticket stub in my wallet. I think I had it for years, but that was don't get me singing because I will sing me.
Where's your head on a pillow made of concrete?
I've seen far too many movies. I think to ever have kept all those things together, not with all my moves. Brad Peterson. Wow, there are too many Petersons around here. I love movie collectibles, but I hate spending a lot of money. I have a few autographs from people I admire, like Kevin Smith and Ralph Bakshi. I also have a Jason mask signed by a few people involved in the Friday the 13th franchise. I'd like to get more signatures on it, but I don't really do the convention thing. Probably the most unique things I have are some movie programs and rental VHS from Japan. You know, if you really want autographs, the conventions are the best way to get them. I think half the reason I go to any of these is just so I can get autographs, whether it's autographs for comic books, for movies, for, you know, hardback books. I love to get them signed as well. And conventions are a great place to do it. So you may want to work on, you know, it's not your thing, but maybe work on making it your thing.
Or maybe if he had a brother that goes to conventions on occasion, you could send it with him.
Yeah, well, actually, I have my brother quite often come with me just so he can get a second thing for me signed.
Nice. Sign it to Justin, please.
Yeah. But I think the only VHS tape I've still got is a Star Wars collection. My parents got it for me, God, I don't know how many years ago. And it's got this hologram on the cover. It's a blue box.
Yep, I got that set. That.
Yeah. So I got it. It'll probably never get played again, but I've still got it.
Well, it's like the last time that the original was released without all the goofy stuff in it, right?
Which ones?
The Star Wars. That's the last collection that was untarnished by all the goofy stuff that Lucas did in the.
It might have been.
So Yeah, it'll look grainy as crap, but you could go see it without all the extra stuff on there. So,
Troy Heinrich says, I never would have thought that a record, yes, that's an LP, would be one of my favorite collectibles, but I have a red vinyl 33 with music from season 1 and 2 of The Blacklist. The best part is that the dossier inside the sleeve has confidential information. The record itself then doubles as a giant decoder ring. Super cool.
That is cool. I haven't gotten into the vinyl thing. My brother has. I am kind of thinking about it.
So you're in the boat, in the camp of that it sounds better on vinyl?
I would say it's better. It's just, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a warmth to it that a digital processing of it doesn't deliver, but that an album does. But, you know, some people prefer one over the other. I'm not going to choose sides. I just think they have their individual strengths.
Sure. Totally.
Cool.
All right. Well, thanks to everyone for the responses. And I do want to encourage everybody to check out the Facebook group so you can actually see all the pictures that everyone posted of these collections. There's a lot that we didn't get to because we're short on time. There's some really cool stuff that merely talking about it just doesn't do it justice. So be sure to check that out. All right. What's this movie? This is the portion of the show where each week we play ours or a listener's suggested clip from a movie. If you think you know what the clip is, you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. And next week, we'll give you a proper host shout out. Last week's answer was Brian's pick, and it was Logan's Run. Those who got it correct were Sean McGuire, Carlos Hernandez, Craig Schermerhorn, Sandra Koch, Scott Martinson, who also says, love the podcast, Tommy Lynch, who also says Logan's Run is brilliant, features a lot of Jenny Agutter, which is a wonderful thing. This week, it is actually, we've mentioned him several times in the show already, Troy's turn. He's not only providing the clip for us this week, but he is actually producing the show for us this week in Aaron's absence. You haven't heard from him yet, but he's actually the silent partner listening in on the episode and doing all of our edits and posting the site for us. So thanks to Troy for doing that. Troy? So this is Troy's clip. If you think you know what it is, you can email us again at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Guess it correctly, and we'll call you out next week. Here's your clip.
This is just some big joke to you, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's not.
Yes, yes. You know, see, this is exactly why I broke up with you in the first place. You are irresponsible, self-centered, completely childish, and look, I need to move on.
All right, okay, wait. I know I used to be that way. I used to be all those things, but not anymore. I'm serious, Chloe. Ever since you dumped me, I've been thinking about my life, and I've changed.
Sure you have.
I have. I came down here to volunteer.
For what?
For the Heal the Day.
Watch your back.
Heal the Bay?
Yes, that's what I said.
Oh, I know it, but I don't know it. So hopefully our listeners know it because it is. I'm drawing a blank on that one.
No idea.
No? I've heard the clip. I just can't place it for some reason. All right, let's go into reviews. We're just going to do one quick speed review. As we mentioned earlier in the top of the show, Aaron is not here, and you've probably noticed it by now, but he was kind enough to leave us a recorded review of he saw Keanu this past week. So we're going to go ahead and let him play that clip really quick. Take it away, Aaron.
Hey guys, it's Aaron. I couldn't be there this week, and apparently nobody saw a movie but me. Lazy sons of bitches. So I thought I would throw in the new one that I saw, which is Keanu. And I'm sorry I couldn't be there this week. I am busy doing my Prince tour across the country. It should be huge. It's coming to a city near you. I'm looking forward to it. Getting back to the movie. Keanu stars Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key. You know them from the Key and Peele on, I think it's Comedy Central. And they're basically a couple guys, and Peele has recently had a crushing breakup when all of a sudden, this adorable little kitten, he nicknames Keanu after the greatest thespian of all time, Keanu Reeves, shows up at his door, and he's saved. His life is finally whole again. Then, as fate would have it, his apartment is ransacked when these boys are out having a good time, enjoying a guy's weekend, and Keanu is taken, which it comes to be known that Keanu was kidnapped as a mistake by a drug deal gone rogue. It happens. It's happened to all of us. So basically, these two whitest black guys in the history of cinema end up having to pretend to be black stereotypes and join a gang and act like thugs and blend in order to pop some caps and some asses and get that kitty back. Basically, you got Method Man who pops in as the drug dealer who's got Keanu and they have to work with. And Method Man actually has a lot of presence. He's probably my favorite thing about the movie. But you want to know, how was the movie? Everybody's talking about this movie. It's got to be hilarious, right? It's about a couple of guys thugging it, trying to get a kitty back. How could it go wrong? So many ways it's not even funny. There are so many jokes that don't land that everyone that does feels like some kind of savage relief. Because, man, I've just been sitting through this bleh for the last however long, just waiting for a laugh, and then finally I get a laugh. Now, the kid, it'd probably be better if the kitty was in it a little bit more, because even though I don't like cats, this kitten is adorable. It's hard not to love it. I mean, seriously, I wanted to take it home. Didn't want to keep it. Just like take it home, let it run around like 3-4 times, and then take it out again. Just, you know, I can't keep a cat. But the kitten is adorable. If it was in more of the movie, it'd probably be a little cooler. There's a couple of slow motion action scenes where the cat is dodging bullets, and that's way more fantastic than anything else that happens in the movie. I just don't find it that funny. I think it's just a typical Key and Peele skit, just stretched out to feature length. That's all it is. I didn't like it. It just didn't seem to be nearly what I was hoping the hype would lead it to be. And I wish I could say that it was just lowered expectations, but man, you don't walk into a kitty thug movie and expect a whole lot. So I didn't have high expectations. I just wanted some ridiculous laughs, and I feel like everything was forced. Most of the humor is forced, exaggerated, over the top. It didn't really get me. I did like Method Man. I'd like to see him in a few more things, but I don't want a Keanu too. You know what I'm saying? I just don't. Much like the Matrix films, I don't need more of them. Okay. All right, guys, that's going to do it. If $10 is the full price of admission, I would give Keanu $450. I would suggest you just wait and rent it. It'll probably be fun if you get high as a kite with your drug dealing friends. Okay? All right, take care and have a great show.
All right, let's move on to the box office. Brian, how did the box office do this weekend?
The Jungle Book continues its reign with a $43 million weekend in its third week. It's crossed over the $250 million threshold, so I'm guessing this one is pretty much a success. Mm-hmm. The Huntsman Winter's War was wishing $9 million was enough to win the weekend, but it wasn't close. And the kitty cat kidnapping caper movie Keanu from Key and Peele only captured $9 million in its uncorking this weekend. While Mother's Day had a misfire, making a meager $8 million, which might make future movie stars meander towards other movies. And finally, Barbershop, the next cut, bobbed and weaved to bag $6 million after 3 weeks, bringing its bundle to $44 million in total.
That's hilarious. Well, that's what happened last weekend. Justin, what can everybody check out this weekend?
Well, of course, it's going to be Captain America, Civil War. I don't think any other movie is going to come close to getting a screening this weekend. I could be wrong, but it seems like all of the word of mouth from the screenings from overseas have been nothing but spectacular. The Rotten Tomato Meter
Rotten Tomato Meter?
Yeah, that thing. It's like at 95% last time I looked. It's going to be a monster. It already has been. But once again, directed by the Russo brothers, Anthony and Joe Russo, political interference in the Avengers activities causes a rift between former allies Captain America and Iron Man. As far as the cast goes, I mean, this is just a cavalcade of stars with Chris Evans, Robert Downey Jr., and Scarlett Johansson, Anthony Mackie, Don Cheadle, Jeremy Renner, Chadwick Boseman, Paul Bettany. I mean, the list goes on and on. Paul Rudd, Tom Holland, with Peter Parker / Spider-Man. This one is, I mean, really the only movie worth talking about. How are you guys? Have you been pumped for this for a long time? You ready for it? Or are you kind of getting tired of the Marvel thing yet?
Actually, I was kind of lukewarm on this one until I decided this week to go back and watch the first two, which I saw both in the theater and remember kind of just thinking, man, they're pretty good, but I just didn't love them. Holy cow, those movies are fantastic, especially Winter Soldier. Just solid from front to mm-hmm. back in that thing. Mm-hmm. And I just feel reinvigorated to go see Civil War. I cannot wait. I'm probably going to go see it on Thursday.
Yeah, recently on cable, I want to say it was on Stars, they've been playing Winter Soldier, then Age of Ultron, and then Ant-Man back to back to back. And so I've caught Winter Soldier really more than I ever expected in the last few weeks. So yeah, it's kind of got me going a little bit. I really like First Avenger and Winter Soldier. I liked a lot also. I wasn't blown away by it and moved as much as a lot of people when it first came out. Again, it's one of those, it's just a degree of how much I liked it versus how much somebody else liked it. But I'm really excited about this. I think the Civil War storyline, when I heard that this was going to be it, I was hoping this would be stuck with just one movie or connected with just one movie. I hope this is something that is a thread that runs through multiple movies, because I think they probably could have done this multi-movie thread just based on this alone, which is kind of what they did with the comic books. It was one of those crossover type events that lasted a summer or longer or something like that. So I'm really excited about this. I've been trying to keep myself sequestered from any more information, and I'm not reading. I don't really read reviews going into a big movie. They tend to give more information. I don't care how unspoilery they are. You can't help but talk so much about a movie before it comes out and still not spoil something. So trying to go into it with fresh eyes.
Totally. Also, be sure to check out the written review. Dave McGraw, who's out in South Korea. Is that right? Is that where he is?
Yeah. Yes. It wouldn't be the North.
Yeah. Well, he got a chance to see it because it's releasing everywhere in America, everywhere except America, a week early, which makes sense because it's called Captain America. But he got a chance to check it out, and he wrote a written review on the website. So check it out at thehollywoodoutsider.com. So I think it's safe to say that is our pick of the week since we didn't even mention anything else.
Yeah, I would say so.
All right, we'll go on to Blu-ray and video on demand releases. This is for May 10th. The first one is Deadpool. I'm not even going to read a synopsis on that because if you're not familiar with that, you probably haven't been listening to the show too long. But Deadpool, we talked about on episode 219. Justin gave it $8.50. Brian gave it $10. And Scott and Aaron gave it $9. Yes, I just referred to myself in the third person. That's how I roll. Also releasing on disc is The Boy. An American nanny is shocked that her new English family's boy is actually a life-size doll. After she violates a list of strict rules, disturbing events make her believe that the doll is really alive. This one stars Lauren Cohan from Walking Dead fame. Also, we've got Where to Invade Next. To learn what the USA can learn from other nations, Michael Moore playfully invades them to see what they have to offer. Yes, it's another documentary from the guy that likes to stir the pot quite a bit. We're also getting the disc release of Scream, the TV series. The first season is available, so you can check that out there. And on video demand, we've got a movie called Well Wishes. After losing his job on a coin toss, a man concocts a fantastical plan to build an enterprise of harvesting coins from wishing fountains. It actually sounds a lot more interesting, believe it or not. There's some supernatural aspect of it where the coins just magically are appearing from this fountain, and he decides to collect them and earn some money that way. So it actually sounds kind of interesting. And this is the part of the show where we usually do some kind of trivia or ho game. We kind of switch it up every other week or so. And this week we decided to go with the flashback. This is a streaming film or TV spotlight where one of us hosts brings to the table a little known show people should check out. Brian, it's your turn this week. So what do you have for us?
All right. I've got one. It's on Netflix. I don't recall many people talking about this at all. It's kind of an independent science fiction movie called Robot Overlords, which sounds like a ridiculous title. And it's almost like one of those shark versus, octopus versus tarantula type.
Like a sci-fi thing?
Yeah, almost. That's kind of what I was expecting going into it, but it's actually pretty good. It's the special effects are way better than anything you would see on sci-fi. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like those movies at all. But basically the Earth is invaded. This kind of takes place after an invasion by these robots, and they basically make humans kind of like cattle or whatever. They're relegated to certain areas. They're implanted with little devices. And if you leave, basically pretty much if you leave your house, you're in trouble and possibly obliterated. So this takes place in, I want to say, Scotland or somewhere around Great Britain anyway. And you know, it's about some, you know, a revolution breaks out and demons try to fight back against the machines, so to speak. So just go ahead and forget about Transformers. It's nothing like Transformers. It's not one of those silly movies, kind of like Sharknado, anything like that. It does star Ben Kingsley, Gillian Anderson, and a couple other people you may recognize. So there's some legit talent there, and it's really only a couple of years old. I think 2014 is when it was released. So, but Robot Overlords, it's not great. I don't want to set expectations very high here. But it's one of those to where you look at it and you go, all right, I'll give that a shot. And then you just come away kind of like, all right, that was actually pretty good. So
that actually sounds really interesting.
Look into that.
Yeah, I was kind of interested at first, but then when you mentioned the Ben Kingsley and Gillian Anderson, there's some actually like reputable actors behind this. I might have to check that one out. So. Okay, well, as we head into the closing here, I want to remind everybody to please like us on Facebook. We have a Hollywood Outsider Facebook group for movie and TV fans. Now, this isn't just for fans of the show. It's for anyone who likes to talk about them. So feel free to hop on over there and join up. The link is in the show notes. Also, please, as a reminder, review us on iTunes, and we'll read your review on the show. We've also got some emails, and Justin, why don't you kick things off for us there?
Philip Thompson says, I think a live-action Borderlands movie would be a lot like Fury Road.
Yeah.
Kind of the same feel to me. I confused score with song, so my song, even though it wasn't made for a movie, Mad World from Donnie Darko and the Oh Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack. I love that soundtrack. My favorite's when the slaves are singing right before the flood. Goosebumps.
I need to go watch that again.
Oh, it's so good.
Brian, you're up.
In this all town, right. Just a geographical oddity. It's two weeks from everywhere.
I need some pomade.
I don't like pomade. I like Dapper Dan.
Oh, damn. We're in a tight spot. All right. So Paula Sell says, Aaron, that intro was great. Nice job. Great topic, guys. I enjoyed this singing. The music picks were nice. Glad to hear you. Glad to hear you're doing good, Justin. That is good news. Another fun show in the books. And Aaron, I did listen to the intro more than once. So funny.
I actually did as well.
I want to go on record, and this is a tough pill to swallow. But as much hammering as we do about, I'm sorry, his ridiculous impersonations and stuff. This one was very good. It was done very well, and you know, golf clap to Fearless Leader.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. Angela Lee Wallach wrote in, she said, fantastic episode. I don't know what I laughed at more, Aaron's Prince homage in the beginning or the Disney oxycodone song at the end. Seriously, it was equal parts brilliance mixed with no shame. I also love that you kept trying to rap the lyrics to Lose Yourself and nobody was down with it.
Nope. I wanted to give him the satisfaction.
I'm still laughing at that.
Wasn't going to let him have it. Brad Peterson says, Purple Rain bashing and I'm out. I don't think we bash the film. I think we all kind of agree that it's not the best film ever made, but that the music in the film is incredible. So I'm going to call that bashing. Hopefully not.
Vicky Hernandez Calguero says, I'm not ashamed of the cheesiness I'm about to share. In chronological order, one, wouldn't it be good with Nick Kershaw, from Nick Kershaw in Pretty in Pink. Number two, Time of My Life, Bill Medley and Jennifer Warnes from Dirty Dancing.
Good call.
Yeah. I thought about that one too, and I wasn't sure if it was made for the movie or if it was, you know, made before. It's just one of those kind of timeless sounding songs that just, it almost sounds like it could have been made in the 60s or something, but that's definitely a good choice. Number three, Everything I Do It For You, Bryan Adams, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Oh God, I know it.
Played that song at so many weddings and school dances back in the day.
Damn you, Bryan Adams.
Oh, that video is just really so much better than the movie. even though it's pretty much scenes from the movie, it's just made better than the movie. Number four, God Give Me Strength from Ileana Douglas version, not Elvis Costello, Grace of My Heart. Number five, A Thousand Years, Christina Perry from Twilight, Breaking Dawn 2. That last one, I can't believe I'm admitting to it, but the song is so good, I can't count it out. And I will say that is a song that, it's not that I like it, but I give it credit because anytime I hear it, it's stuck in my head for at least the next 4 hours.
I don't remember that song. I'll have to go back and I'll not freaking watch the movie again. Jesus, no.
No, just
at least go on iTunes.
Find it on iTunes and hit the sample, yes. 45-second deal there.
Totally. Craig Schermerhorn says, still a little lost on the, quote, original music thing, so I'm just going to list my favorite movie soundtracks. The Big Chill, Crossroads, 1986, The Wall, Warriors, Full Metal Jacket, Wayne's World, Dirty Dancing, and Heavy Metal.
Oh, Heavy Metal. Damn, that was a good movie, and that's a great soundtrack. If you like classic rock eras anyway. Steve Peterson says, I absolutely hate Man of Constant Sorrow. Sorry, Brian. The movie came out on VHS while I worked at Blockbuster, and I heard the song about 20 times a day thanks to our trailer tapes.
I gotta give him a little bit on that. I been there, done that.
You know what, Steve? Lost is the worst show in the history of television. And it's a horrible choice of tattoos. So there. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
He also says, not an original movie song. It's actually a traditional folk song dating back to 1913. And yeah. he is right. And I thought that when you brought it up, but then I just love that song so much, I just let it go.
Well, for somebody who hates it so much, he sure does know a lot of a lot of trivia about it. Just saying. Jenny Johnson says, Everything I Do by Bryan Adams was always a favorite, and the end credit song to The Princess Bride. Lost Stars from Begin Again is a great song, and whether Adam Levine is singing or Keira Knightley, great soundtrack, Love Actually.
Yep, good call. Our John Davenport says, several rounds of applause in the opening. He's getting lots of kudos on that.
He just eats it up too, y'all.
He does.
Y'all have no idea.
The Crow soundtrack is one of my favorite soundtracks. So great. That and Judgment Night were constantly played.
Yeah, I forgot about Judgment Night. My favorite on there is a Pearl Jam and Cypress Hill song that's on there that I love.
Mm-hmm. Is that movie about, like, what was it, Bill Paxton?
No, I think it was Dennis Leary. Like that? I think it was in Dennis Leary, and it's a bunch of white guys heading to, I think, a football game or something, and they take a wrong turn and end up on the wrong side of the tracks.
Okay, yeah, that's the movie I'm thinking of. I could have the cast mixed up, but yeah, I think that's the same movie I'm thinking of.
Sean McGuire says, Sing me a song, podcast man, listening to the latest episode. Great episode, but sir can sing. New career? Jeez, people, stop. His ego is already out of control. You don't have to goose it anymore.
Well, thanks to everybody for writing in. We do appreciate the emails. Please keep those coming. We do like reading them as well as reading them on the show. Where you can find us. Normally, we do have outtakes at the end of the episode, but since we do have Troy taking care of this episode for us, we're not going to suffer him through that. But as a reminder, the website is thehollywoodoutsider.com. We've also got our Twitter handle, which is H_Outsider, our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider, and our email, as we mentioned earlier, feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. You can listen and subscribe for free on our Apple or Android apps, on iTunes, Spotify, or just throw our RSS feed in your podcast app of choice. But that's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Thanks to Brian and Justin for joining us.
Just real quick, just a clarification. Yes, it was Dennis Leary. But he also had Emilio Estevez and Cuba Gooding Jr.
Okay. Well, hope you guys enjoyed the episode. And remember, next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn.